Well, hello everybody and good morning. We are working on Rule 10, Rules for the Astral Plane, Rules for Magic for the Astral Plane. And this is number 10.9 on Rule 10 and the 25th of our programs for the Rules for the Astral Plane. Now, we've been talking about studying the emotions, and DK has represented this, recommended this book called The Science of Emotions by Bhagavan Das. And I've had a chance to look that book over, and it's really worthwhile. It's a very, interestingly, a fifth-ray book about a sixth-ray subject, so maybe one would like to get hold of it and study the different types of emotional response in the attempt not only to understand but to control the astral body. So, okay. This is all about the control of the astral body. Now, there's something from the old commentary that we're going to begin. Metaphorically speaking, he says, the experience that lies ahead upon the path is covered in the following esoteric phrases. When the stream enters the river of life, excuse me, its passage can be traced for a short moment and then lost. When the currents of the sentient life meet where the river passes round the mountain's massive foot, then one vast stream is seen, which floweth north. This seems to suggest the idea of entering the stream once the astral body is controlled to a degree at the second initiation. And the mountain is the mountain of initiation, and there is a great stream which continues to flow along the path of initiation and upon the way of higher evolution as well. I assume that this flowing towards the north is towards the higher centers and the higher possibilities, and individual life is lost increasingly in the life of the ashram, in the life of the plan. The plan is an impersonal process, and it's not that we retain our distinctness and cultivate that. We give all we can to the expression of the divine plan, and we become lost, as it were. Excuse me, morning voice here. We become lost in the general flow towards the higher possibilities and then towards the north, which represents, in a way, the very top of the human energy system, as the south represents the bottom. The symbology of this is apparent and can be used also to depict the flow of the two currents, Ida and Pingala, and their blending in the river of energy that mounts to the head. Yeah, well, that is clear. Let's see here. I want to make sure that we have something that we can use. And here we are. All right, that will do. And there we go. There is the meeting place, and there the sacrifice enacted upon the Mount of Golgotha, the place of the skull. So, the things which were dramatized in the life of Jesus are actually spiritually, anatomical, and physiological. Really interesting here, the actual way that the Sushumna currents rises, blending Ida and Vingala to the very top of the head. This is the rising of the will energy at the base of the spine, all the way into the energy of purpose, which is held in the highest head center. Ida on the left and representing the form, and Vingala representing the soul, and Sushumna in this case representing the spirit. So we have to make sure that these flows can occur, and there is a constant cleansing going on to make sure that the flow can be unobstructed and not too damaging. The Kundalini flow itself will cleanse and purify, but if the obstructions are excessive and the Kundalini is aroused too early, there will be severe damage and the setting back of the process for some lives, perhaps. So we proceed cautiously with the fires of the form and the fires of the personality in general. So we're considering the sentient body, that is the term which Master DK prefers. DK, it almost disappeared, doesn't it? Okay. DK prefers this term to astral body. In considering the sentient body of a human being, I will probably help the most if I deal with the term, deal with it in terms of the moods and ordinary expressions. For it is only in dealing with its effects and in seeking to master them that man arrives at knowledge of himself and so becomes the master. So we need to recognize and master our moods and reactions within the sentient body. Do I have one for that? Maybe not, and I think I should, as long as we're going to use it so much. Excuse me. I have to, when possible, take the time to do these programs, not always at convenient times, but to grab whatever minutes are available and then be able to excuse me, send them forth. Okay. Moods and ordinary expressions. And we deal with effects, we master the effects. Master our moods and reactions and other effects within the sentient body. Okay. The most ordinary manifestations of the astral body are, and look what comes up right away. Not necessarily the desirable reactions, fear, depression, or its opposite pole, hilarity, and I'm sure that many of us have noticed how hilarity gives way easily to depression, and maybe the opposite is also true. I'll put that down. Hilarity gives way often to depression. Desire for the satisfaction of the animal appetites. So desire is directed downwards. And this is Martian in its origin. there's water within reach. I didn't see that. We also have a type of, maybe upreaching desire, at least the individual considers it so, for the desire for happiness, and then a type of desire which many of us as students of esotericism possess, and students of spirituality, at first, at least, the desire for liberation, and that flies on the wings of aspiration. Well, we have to not exactly overcome that, but the desire for service and for the sharing of compassion and the saviorship, elevation of others, that has to take the place of the desire for liberation. Every time there's a universe, there's no real liberation. The universe itself is incarnation, the incarnation of the absolute deity and the infinitesimal portion of absolute infinity is incarnated. And there's no liberation from that except when a universe disappears into its absolutely infinite matrix. At least this is my perspective at the present time, and all I can do is share it. You know, the mind is woefully inadequate to handle these matters when dealing with infinitude. And yet, one must, I think, because all of the implications are there, and we're involved in some kind of infinite process, many, many infinite processes, I say, we're actually involved in and have been forever. So paradox enters, and apparent contradiction of rational thought, but there'll be a way to come into the fuller understanding of it through still higher faculties than maybe at present we possess. So these are the most ordinary manifestations of astral activity. In these five, there are summed up practically most of the sentient experiences of man, and we will consider each one of them from the following angles: the cause, the effect, and the method of direction. So just pause for a moment. Let's just say pause and ask yourself, how does my astral body vibrate? To the fear response, to the ups and downs, sometimes symbolized by Aquarius, depression and its opposite pole, hilarity. A lot of that, I think, I've spent a lot of time in the discipline of theater and opera, and I've seen a lot of this. The satisfaction, desire for the satisfaction of animal appetites. Well, I think they stay with us for a long time, maybe subsiding a bit when we're older in the physical body. Desire for happiness, that seems ubiquitous, doesn't it? And it is a sign, it is a point reached when the disciple is no longer desiring happiness, but desiring to serve the plan, and happiness and joy are the byproducts, the side effects, the almost inevitable effects. And then desire for liberation. That's a tough one because life is burdensome in many ways. And Master D.K. calls it, you know, the dire pain of life itself. Those are his words. So it's maybe only natural that on this particular planet, where there is an element of imprisonment due to the present state of development of our logos and certain major catastrophes along the way, the desire for liberation, I think, is quite a natural factor, as long as it does not remove us from the great stream of service, because we can't really go through the door of initiation alone, as the old commentary tells us, but when holding the hands of our brothers, we can pass through, and that the door of initiation for the one who would pass through alone was simply a figment of the imagination. So we have to remember that. It's in the identification and the unification with others that we actually pass through the door of initiation. So there's a bit of a paradox. In order to go high, one must go low. In order to climb, one must descend. So, and these five are summed up practically most of the sentient experiences of man. And we will consider them. You will note that I said method of direction, the cause and effect, and method of direction, not method of control. Aspirants, well, okay, I mean, he really calls our attention to that, and sometimes there are forces that when we attempt to control and even suppress them, they have a very bad reaction upon our system. You will note that I said method of direction, not method of control. Aspirants must learn that they are working with and in forces, and that right and wrong activity on the physical plane is due simply to a right or wrong direction of the force currents, and not to anything inherently wrong or right in the energies themselves. Okay, right or wrong activity on the physical plane is due simply to right or wrong direction. So we achieve rightness with regard to forces by right direction in line with the divine plan. One almost has to use that as a refrain, you know. Well, now he's going to take these up, and there's quite a bit of material on fear. We'll always be coming back to these, whatever page this is, 297, and I'm just going to enlarge these points, because I think we're going to be dealing with quite an extensive discussion here, ongoingly here. And fear is one of the most important things discussed, and how to handle that. This is one of the most usual of the manifestations of astral energy, and it is put first because it constitutes, for the vast majority, the dweller on the threshold, and also in the last analysis, is the basic astral evil. Well, I think the fear reaction will pretty well be banished by the time the fourth initiation is approached, but before that time, I think every one of us must admit, if we dig deeply enough, we're going to find it, however subtle it may be. It may not be one of those obvious fear and trembling manifestations, but there are recoils, tendencies to pull back where perhaps we should be moving forward. I kept on asking myself, as I mentioned earlier, you know, if I had to travel underground for 4 kilometers, much of it underwater, given my present stage of health and expertise as a diver, I think I might experience fear if I was forced to do that. And I'm sure we can all find the areas, whether they relate to the physical plane or to some sort of psychological task or some type of exposure, you know, we can find the fear if we look. Every human being knows fear. Now, a human being, let's see, the highest of the human beings is the master. Does the master know fear? Well, I think by that time there is the mastery. Every human being knows fear, and the range of fear vibrations extends from the instinctual fears of the savage man, based on the ignorance of the laws and forces of nature, and on his terror of the dark and the unknown, where, you know, the violent animals lurked and caused such havoc among early man, we're told. The terror of the dark and the unknown, to the fear so prevalent today of loss of friends and loved ones, of health, of money, of popularity, and on to the final fears of the aspirant, the fear of failure, the fear which has its roots in doubt, that after all is the esoteric teaching true, the fear of ultimate negation or annihilation, I think that's really a big one and foundational. The fear of death, which he shares equally with all humanity, even the aspirant, right? The fear of the great illusion of the astral plane, of the phantasmagoria of life itself, and also the fear of loneliness on the path, and the very fear of fear itself. I think Franklin Roosevelt made much of that point. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. It's a great first-rate statement. And, you know, it's amazing how the oratory of certain great leaders during the Second World War really inspired the people. There's also a very negative demagogic oratory which arouses the beast in man, and we are these days experiencing the power of some people to do that and to take humanity backwards strictly into the personal. This is a very good section, really. And the range of the fear vibrations, I just want to read that again, extends from the instinctual fears of the savage man. You know, the gods are in the thunder and lightning and the wind and so forth, based on his ignorance of the laws and forces of nature, and on his terror of the dark and the unknown, you know, from which he could be attacked, to the fears so prevalent today in a more social man, right, more in the love petals of the egoic lotus, the loss of friends and loved ones, of health, of money, of popularity, and on to the final fears of the aspirant. I mean, does it stop with the aspirant? It would be nice if it did. The fear of failure, the fear, you know, but there can be no failure once one is convinced of that and has seen. There can be delay. There can be temporary apparent failure, but no real failure. The fear which has its roots in doubt is all that we are taught true. There's that painting of Rorick where the saint is praying quite fervently, but there's a little black serpent biting his heel, the serpent of doubt. The fear of ultimate negation or of annihilation, to me that seems to be a root fear, the fear of non-being. It's kind of a philosophical fear. The fear of death, which shares a lot with the idea of obliteration and non-being. And the aspirant shares this with all humanity if the aspirant is true and clear. So we are looking at the various kinds of fears, and they seem to mount and become higher for the aspirant. You know, fear of failure, maybe fear of the phantasmagoria of life itself. That's amazing, because DK says that you have to consider outer life and all associated persons as phantasmagoria. But I think the ultimate existential fears are the fears of negation and of annihilation and the fear of death. Anyway, DK says this list could be largely extended, but suffices to indicate the prevalence of fears of all kinds. Prevalence. It's the number one condition in the astral body. And this particular book is dedicated to the control of the astral body, and thus, in a way, to the preparation for the second initiation. These fears, dominate most situations and darken many happy moments. Well, he speaks like a man of experience. They reduce man, oh, what a picture. They reduce man to a timid and frightened atom of sentient life, standing afraid before the stupendousness of the problems of existence, aware of his insufficiency as man to cope with all situations, and unable to leave his fears and questionings behind and step into his heritage of freedom and of life. That is absolutely such a beautiful, beautiful statement, you know. And I think, you know, as a result of it, I want to enlarge it and reread it, because it just captures what fear does to us, and we really have to know and understand that. So these fears, they dominate most situations and darken many happy moments. Well, just think about your own life and the happy moments that may have been darkened by that lurking, looming fear of something, who knows what, for the aspirant. So often, fear of failure, you know. They reduce man, and this is where the language gets very graphic, to a timid and frightened atom of sentient life, standing afraid before the stupendousness of the problems of existence, aware of his insufficiency, you know, like, what can we do? I can't do it, you know. So often we hear that. Aware of his insufficiency as a man to cope with all situations, and unable to leave his fears and questionings behind and step into his heritage